Yo, 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 welcome to Crate 808, and today we continue our series discussing the greatest three album runs in 1990s rap. This time around, we're dipping into one of the greatest rap duos of all time, Mobb Deep, and bringing their case for best run in the 90s. Man, it's been a long time coming. It's a pleasure to have on a good friend of the pod and co-host of the Breaking Atoms podcast, the actual factual Chris Mitchell is in the house. How are you doing, man?
I'm good, man. Yeah, thanks for the intro. I'm honored as a lifelong Mobb Deep fan that you reached out. And yeah, I'm excited. This is the first time I've done anything like this. So Hitman for hire. I appreciate the call.
Love that, Chris, man. Love it. Now, I know we're going to go in. I can see you repping the Mobb T there already.
This is very important. This is the first gift my wife ever bought me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, 9 years ago. Yeah, it was my birthday, my 30th birthday. She bought me a backpack and a few other bits, and she bought me this Mobb Deep t-shirt. So she's a massive fan too. So
wicked. Shout out. Yeah. Shout out, man.
Yeah. That's shout out to my queen Roxy, you know?
Nice, man. Nice. And also shout out to the Potty Mouth of the South Summit, the other co-host. All the time, man. You guys, go check out that pod, man.
I appreciate it, man. Summit's in the trenches somewhere in the upside down doing something, you know. He's the master strategist, whereas, you know, I'm the liner notes guy and doing all the nerdy stuff.
Yeah.
He's definitely a business mind, and that's what really brings a lot of my strengths to the forefront too. Like, he's able to say, this is what we need to be doing. This is who we need to speak to. And he goes out there and he does it. Honored and humbled to work with him. He couldn't be here today. But yeah, that's my guy, man.
Wicked, man. Well, peeps, go check out Breaking Atoms. And also, please smash the subscribe button down here on YouTube and go tell your friends. I'm doing that housekeeping ahead of time. Go check out crate808.com for the rest of this series. Chris, man, we've talked Gangstar, we've talked Cube, we've talked Pac, we've talked Tribe. We talked on the greats, yeah? But today, this run is really intriguing to me, right? We're not going to do Juvenile Hell.
No, we don't count that one.
Okay. So we go 95's Infamous, 96's Hell on Earth. I am so glad we get to talk about this album. And 99's Murder Music. It's a run, Chris. It's a run.
Yes.
But before we dive in, though, I have to ask you, as a point of call, what's the least hip-hop thing you've done the last 24 hours, man?
Listen, man, I live a very simple and complicated life. So I've literally just got out of therapy, but I've also just taken my bins in. So the least hip-hop thing I've done in the last 24 hours is a lot of just house admin, like washing clothes and taking my bins in. You know, it's the life of a seasoned MC, you know?
Like it, man, I like it.
It's like the De La Soul video when the stakes is high, when they're in the laundrette. That was me.
That's you. So, you're Dave. Yeah. I like that, absolutely, man. Wicked, man. Yeah. Wicked. Well, Chris, man, I'm not going to halt you from bringing this argument to the table. Mobb, first of all, why do you think they've got the best three album run of the 1990s?
My argument is this. I think with the Infamous, Hell on Earth, and Murder Music, Mobb Deep have the greatest three album run in 90s hip hop because they were able to create a feeling and an experience that encapsulated music, language, and lifestyle, right? So when you think about the music, yeah, you know, bangers galore, you know, you can pick any album from the Infamous right through to even, you know, the current day. Like, the music was always of a high level. When you think about language, the Dunn language, you know, they created their own slang. How do you take a word from someone who had a speech impediment, who was trying to say the word son, and then turn it into Dunn, and now that's used all over the world, right? Lifestyle, the clothes, you know, the bandanas, the tattoos, you know, the misspelled Hennessy on the jersey, like all these things. In my local area, for example, there's a street called Colin Deep Lane. And I was walking down the road one day and someone crossed out Colin and put Mobb.
Wow.
So Mobb Deep Lane. And you're thinking, there's this little town in Northwest London celebrating Mobb Deep. So they encapsulated music, language, and lifestyle. Havoc and Prodigy and what they brought to the table were some of the foundational bricks to the mid to late 90s New York sound, and it can still be heard today. We'll touch on them later. You know, Griselda, the whole upstate New York movement, what Spesh is doing, Ito, all these people. Mobb Deep was the soundtrack for youthful nihilism, and it was music for knuckleheads. So I wasn't really necessarily a knucklehead, but I know Havocs and Prodigies. I know a few of them, so I was around. Musically and message-wise, they didn't glamorize the environment and the situations that they were in, and there's no hyperbole, apart from, you know, pushing your nose bone into your brain. Like,
yeah, you know.
Can't literally do that. I get it. It's chillingly realistic and immersive. Mm. Similar to when I listen to like a Currency. You know, I don't smoke, but I feel like I want to smoke. Mm. If I listen to Rick Ross, I'll be on the bus. It feels like a Maybach just because of that immersive experience. Mm. Mobb Deep do the same. The music is bleak and it's beautiful, and it's threaded together with stories that link into the generational trauma and the state-sanctioned poverty experienced by Black youth in those times and even today. And my last point is that even though they dropped the poetical prophet's name, those foreboding philosophies were still embedded in the music, where they detailed the idea of the war against all, when it was all against all, and the law of the land is both brutal and solitary. Mm. That's why they have the greatest 3-album run in hip-hop history. And the music was incredible.
Yeah,
let's not forget that.
Yeah.
The music was incredible. It's embedded into our culture. You know, from the 8 Mile movie, Mariah Carey sang on the Shook Ones beat. Stevie Wonder.
Damn.
Sang on the Shook Ones beat.
Yeah.
With Q-Tip on there. So, you know, from Drake to all those names I mentioned before, like, you know, what Prodigy and Havoc did, I think, and I'll sum this up at the end, is that their influence, particularly in this era we're discussing here, outweighs any record they ever sold. You would think they were multi-platinum artists based on their influence.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that really harkens to my broad point about, I mean, we're going to go into each album as we go, but like the broad point being, they always, it's odd because they never were like mainstream, but they're everything. If you know what I mean, it's odd. It's they're not like, my mum probably doesn't know their names, but
yeah,
they are the chrysalis, the kind of epitome of what hip hop is, really. And all those bullet points you've said there, especially the fact that these are stories being told that are real life stories from real life tragedies, and they've not put any bells and whistles on it. It's just that sound, and that's why that sound is now synonymous with what we all like to call the realness, right? And,
yeah.
And I feel
absolutely.
Yeah, and I feel that's a very much a big thing that Mobb do for me in my listening, and I'm sure for you and yours. And we've all been to them shows where I remember seeing Mobb. Actually, I didn't actually go to that gig. I went to see Mobb one time. My mate went to see him another time, and the crowd like rushed the stage in like the first 10 minutes. And you were like, oh, of course, it's a Mobb Deep gig.
I have a sad story about that. Their last London show was in Shepherd's Bush. Shepherd's Bush is a bus ride from me. I went to school near Shepherd's Bush, and I was going to go. And something said, nah, I'll go next time. And it was their last show.
Damn.
And Cormega came out during that show too. I'm a massive Cormega fan. We'll touch on him later.
Oh, mega.
And that's one of my biggest hip hop regrets, that I didn't go to that show. Like, it haunts me that, mate, I never got to see them live.
Bro, I'm with you, but I also gave up tickets to Dilla at Jazz Cafe for his last show, and I gave them tickets up.
Gave them away?
No, my mate offered me and I said no. So this is, I feel your pain, and I Chris is going to leave this pod now. Chris is like, well,
I never saw Dilla either. It was the same thing with People Under the Stairs. I said, listen, man, I'll see them next time.
Yeah.
And then before the show, this is going to be our last ever show. Thez One, I'm retiring. I said, what?
Mm.
So
yeah,
after this pandemic and lockdown is over, I've made it a point to say that, you know, whenever I can go to see a show, I'm going to go.
100%. I'm there, man. I'm there. But yeah, your argument has absolutely nailed it so far.
Thank you. I
want to hear personally, on your point of view, Infamous obviously comes out. What did Mobb bring to yourself? Like, what was it in their music that you hadn't heard before and that really grasped you? Where were you at that time, man, when you first heard Infamous?
So the Infamous is one of those albums that really initiated my entry into the hip hop that I've grown to really love and hold dear over the years. I've mentioned him on this podcast so many times, but my friend Sean Etienne, I remember going to his house and I heard Ready to Die for the first time at his house. Mm. Lab Cabin, California, 93 till Infinity. The Infamous was one of those albums he gave me. And I'll never forget seeing the Survival of the Fittest video with the burning barrels. And what really took me back is when Prodigy said on Shook Ones, I'm only 19, but my mind, I'm like, oh my God, yeah, he's similar in age. But it wasn't the crisscross kind of similar in age type thing. It was, he's similar in age, but this man has lived 3, 4, 5 lives.
Yeah.
By the age of 19. And it really intrigued me because it was so realistic. It was so gritty. And, you know, the world I was in, I grew up in church. So a funny story is, after I heard The Infamous, that was me saying, I'm never going to live the street life. Never. It's too stressful. I wouldn't be good at it. But yeah. what it gave, it was almost like a trip to the zoo. You know, you go to the zoo and you can see the animals behind the cages, but you're pretty much safe. I got a first class, a really deep expose into that life from the perspective of someone who was similar in age. It was safe in the sense, slightly voyeuristic, but I really understood it. That's when I really understood, you know, Queensbridge, what it was like. When I went to New York years later, you know, going to Queensbridge and seeing Queensbridge for myself, you really understand it. You understand the music a lot better. So I was this is secondary school. I was into, you know, just getting into Wu-Tang, into the 36 Chambers, to Cal, Liquid Swords. But I would definitely say the Infamous really shaped my tastes in terms of what I like. It came out on Loud Records, so my favorite label. You know, I mentioned before, it's the soundtrack to youthful nihilism. And I just think if you're a youthful knucklehead or, you know, a nerd or a bookworm or whatever, there was just something in the music that really, it was enchanting.
Absolutely.
Enchanting. It had a certain allure to it.
Yeah. Enchant is a really good word because you're kind of mesmerized by the videos. I'm with you with Survival of the Fittest. I was like, who are these guys? The burning, like, fires. And then obviously, if I say to you Shook Ones Part 2, what do you immediately think of, Chris? What's the first thing that comes to your head?
One of the greatest pieces of art ever created. I think you do it injustice by just calling it a song.
Boom.
You know, we use the word classic a lot. We use the word classic a lot. And I feel that word's been overused. But one thing I know, I don't care where it is I go. I live in London. I've been to New York. I've been to Cuba. I've been to Miami. I've been to San Jose. I've heard Shook Ones in all these locations. And the reaction is always the same. It's always the same. Like, even the word shook is now part of popular culture. Like, we use it to this day.
Yeah.
I mentioned before, Mariah Carey sang on Shook Ones. Stevie Wonder sang on Shook Ones. It's been remade so many times. It's a freestyle staple. It was in 8 Mile. In terms of the beat, every time I hear it, it's like I'm hearing it for the first time.
Yeah.
But Prodigy's verse is a rites of passage. I'm sorry, man. I don't want to be elitist, but if you don't know a few lines from this verse, I'm going to have to question you, you know?
I agree.
I'm going to have to question you. And I think in terms of just rap performance, delivery, enunciation, the way it's put together, it's one of the greatest verses ever written.
Yeah.
Like, ever.
Yeah, absolutely.
Ever. So, yeah, and it's proof that sequels can be better than the originals.
There we go. Yeah, what a cherry on top. Absolutely true, man. Absolutely true. It's the apex of what Mob did. For me, when you talk about songs, it's amazing the journey they take with you in your life, right? Like, I remember Shook Ones when I was a kid. No one else listened to it, just me on my own and my neck breaking in my bedroom with my headphones on. Then going to uni, finding my hip-hop mates. Shook Ones now becoming a thugged out banger. Anytime it comes on, you're stopping what you're doing and you're thugging out. And then I remember when 8 Mile dropped, it transformed to a new thing for me because I was in the cinema, and maybe I'm a bit of a romantic and a bit of a geek, but I feel like when hip hop has its moment in a different art form, like cinema or books or drama or whatever, I feel like that's us winning, man. That's us winning. I remember when 8 Mile started and we're in the cinema, it's packed, Eminem's huge. And when Shook Ones came on, there were pockets of this cinema, the UGC cinema, those pockets, and people getting hype in little. And I thought, that's my mate. That's my crew right there, because they know what that beat is. And ever since that film, there's only been a certain number of songs that have just become, as you said, more than a song. That's not a song anymore. That's a tribal trademark. I can argue with you all day about hip hop, but once I put Shook Ones on, we're both in the same crew. Like, we're together.
It's a signifier. I remember being in California for my friend's wedding last year, and I wore my Hi-Ro shirt, and wicked. I walked down the street, and 4 or 5 people gave me the head nod, like that shirt. Oh, you're one of us.
Yeah.
Shook Ones is that in musical form. And, you know, I got a story about Shook Ones. I was on the bus a few years ago listening to Shook Ones, and I opened up my phone and it said "Rest in Peace Prodigy" while I was listening to Shook Ones. So it was kind of just like that song took on, and Prodigy died on my birthday. So
no way.
every year, it's not that I stopped playing Shook Ones, but every year I'll play some Shook Ones, you know, salute Prodigy. I'll also listen to some Apollo Brown because we have the same birthday.
Yeah.
But Shook Ones is hip hop DNA. It's hip hop DNA. It's lightning in a bottle. Like, there's just certain songs, man. Like, it's almost magical. And I'm speaking to you right now and I've got chills.
Yeah.
Because I know the importance of that song, and I would hold Shook Ones up against any hip hop song.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. I'm with you. And I'm glad that we got to like talk about that, because I know that Infamous is a classic album. It's classic. There's so many amazing moments in that. There's a coming of age on the album that you don't often find with a lot of artists, where you just realise, oh, they're so good at working with people like Q-Tip, working with people like, and bringing their own crew, like, you know, having Noid on there, having other people on there.
Hey, what's up? This is Black Thought, and you are now rocking with the Crate 808 Podcast.
Yo. This is Stretch Armstrong.
Ooh-wee! My name is Bobby DeGarcia, a.k.a. Cool Bob Love.
You're now listening to Crate 808.
Hey, yo, what up, y'all? This is Prince Paul, and you're rocking with Crate 808 Podcast.
Yo, it's Evie Evidence, Dilated Peoples, rocking with the Crate 808 Podcast, my favorite shit. Let's go.
Yo, what's going on, y'all? This is Master Ace from Brooklyn, New York, and you're checking out the Crate 808 Podcast, real hip hop.
When you look at the album now, what was the moment where you feel like they differentiated themselves from other maybe hardcore rap at that time for you? Like, was there certain songs where you would go, damn, I've not heard anything like that, and not be Shook Ones? Like,
yeah, I mean, you know, my favorite song on that album is Give Up the Goods.
Fire.
That song right there, and you know, you mentioned Q-Tip, gotta salute Q-Tip, because I think in terms of the case study in arguing for Q-Tip being one of the greatest producers, think about where he was at the time. You know, he had a couple of classics under his belt. I love what he did with the Mobb Deep sound, because he never tried to make them tribe. What his own flavor and added it. You know, I've got some of the demo tracks from the Infamous sessions. And when you hear the original versions of Temperatures Rising and Give Up the Goods, and then you see what what Q-Tip did on that, he was so essential. He brought a certain brightness to the album. The Infamous to me is like a horror flick. Survival of the Fittest, Shook Ones, Party Over, Cradle to the Grave, the start of your ending. These are all horror movies, but Q-Tip just brought that rare glimpse of light. You know, when you think about people living in those environments, you know, days can bleed into each other. It's dark, it's bleak, but sometimes there's moments of brightness, even if they're fleeting. And Q-Tip brought that in musical form. So I'm going to say Give Up the Goods was when I, you know, Queens Get the Money, Long Time, No Cash, when just the delivery. But I think, and I'm going to mention it later, Temperatures Rising is one of those songs, because Havoc brought you right. They brought you right into their living room. You know, the stories about Killer Black being on the run and, you know, I send you money through Western Union. It's like, oh my, like, this is actually happening around us.
Yeah.
You know, when Prodigy said, you know, it's the man's of my word, Killer Black. It's an untold fact. To this day, I want to know, what did he tell you?
Yeah.
Right? What is that untold fact? You know, there were so many questions and scenarios raised, but Up North Trip really highlighted that paranoia of making a wrong move that can send you back to prison. And it just showed me how precarious that lifestyle is. Constantly being on the edge, that anxiety of that life. And I think one thing that Mobb Deep don't get enough credit for, because when you think Mobb Deep, most people think it's street music, shoot 'em up, bang, bang, this. But they really highlighted, you know, mental health issues, the anxiety, the paranoia, drink away the pain is self-medication.
Yeah.
Even though Q-Tip's verse had nothing to do with the song, but that's fine. But it's talking about, I just really like how they added layers to it, and they really humanized. They humanized themselves and the people like them. And that really drew me to them, in the same way like Reasonable Doubt didn't really, it didn't glamorize that life. It was almost like diary pages. These were therapy sessions for Mobb Deep. I remember reading an interview, and the interviewer said, have you guys ever considered getting therapy? And they're like, no, our music is the therapy. I felt very privileged to be able to, in some ways, get an insight and experience that world without necessarily having to deal with the pitfalls and the perils. And it made me sympathetic and show more empathy and understanding to the people who do live that life, and not to be so judgmental, and to know that, you know, you could take a certain step or wrong move in your own life, Chris, and, you know, you might end up somewhere that you don't plan to be. You might take your own up north trip. So
yeah.
I love the fact that they showed, I knew they were different because they showed wisdom beyond their years, and they had nuance, and there was a why to complement the what.
Yeah. I mean, Chris, this is the thing, especially with hip hop generally, but I think with Mobb, we can all sit here and talk about the drums in the mix, the snares, the unreal sampling of Mobb. And we'll talk about that as we go. But right now, just to broaden out this question of what they're doing in this theme that they are bringing, which you've said is mental health, having that therapy sessions from this. I feel like it's interesting when you say that, because I'm not sure if I've heard enough of that embedded in rap. And it comes to fore when Mob are doing this, and when you see stuff like the Wu documentary, I'm not sure if you caught that, but Ghost is sitting there and he's talking in real time as a 50-odd year old man. And he's saying, oh yeah, I think I was probably really depressed and had PTSD. And he's not even realized it until now. And I feel like there's something in this music that, as people, as we grow older, we find them different things. And it's, I hope hip hop still is dealing with that. I don't know if you find that. I don't know if you find that hip hop is dealing with the mental health issues. There was one thing striking that you said to me a while back when I was talking about issues in rap, and everyone talks about homophobia, everyone talks about sexism and rampant misogyny, and those things clearly are problems. I remember one thing you said to me is, I'm interested to know when there's going to be a day when we think one black guy killing another black guy isn't a thing we should be like trying to tackle. Do you know what I mean? I don't know if you remember that message to me, but...
Yeah, I do.
How do you feel about rap now? Like, how is it dealing with that? Do you think it is dealing with that?
Yeah, I think, again, I don't think hip-hop gets enough credit for how they tackle issues. Because, you know, even myself, Cam, like, I've done songs years ago. I did a song in 2009, rather. It was called Intense Rush, talking about, you know, my grandmother's death and how I close my eyes and I hear the flatline. My best friend moved to New York. My new album, I touch on, there's a song called BAME, The Black and Male Experience. We tackle these things, but I think sometimes it's so embedded and encoded in the quote unquote real talk that we sometimes don't realize. You know, you talk about mental health, Scarface, Ghetto Boys, they've been talking about that. Joe Budden made a whole brand called Mood Music based on mental health issues. I think hip hop's just become increasingly more open about talking about those things and humanizing and showing their vulnerability. Like, you know, you listen to someone like a Ghostface, as animated and as colorful as he is, say, hey, I was probably depressed. To hear a 50-year-old man, and, you know, coming from where we come from as ethnic people, we're encouraged not to speak about our problems. You know, don't chat your business. You know, you've got to look good winning, even if you're losing. You know, I go to therapy, and just this morning, I'm happy to share this stuff. I'm 38, and this stuff coming up from when I was 17 years old, stuff that I hadn't dealt with, that I thought wasn't necessarily an issue, is coming to the forefront now. So to answer your question, I think hip hop's doing a great job about dealing with mental health in the music and outside of the music. I think the biggest challenge is, because the audience is now so broad and diverse, you have a section of people that want to keep that out, because they just see it as entertainment. I still see this. This is coded language. Hip hop speaks to hip hop. It's the CNN of the streets.
Yeah.
And it's really important that we keep that breadth of experience and information, whether it's politics, whether it's family life, whether it's mental health. It's really important. As much as the music is therapy to us, it's got to come out. It's literally got to come out, because think about the lives, you know, come on, man. Like, during Hell on Earth, people died during the making of the album. Twin Gambino's brother died going to get some weed. Yeah. Car crash, car flip. I mean, this is all in the music. So, you know, mental health is really important. And I love when my culture and our culture can really talk about the issues of the day, not only in a skillful and an artistic way, but in a way that resonates. And I think hip hop does a great job and doesn't get the credit it deserves in terms of tackling issues around mental health.
Yeah, man. Yeah, no, big. No, I agree. I completely agree with you. It's just interesting when we go back to Infamous and Hell on Earth and Murder Music, and you start seeing those things that maybe you didn't see in that light as a kid. It's a different prism.
I didn't see it. Like, you know, you listen to Everyday Struggle by Biggie. Like, listen to those opening bars. Biggie was depressed.
Yeah. Well, suicidal.
He was depressed. Like, who kills himself at the end of an album?
Yeah.
But, you know, we sometimes dance to one's decline.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting,
you know,
man. Yeah.
Future's no different. You know, Future will go on a song and say he's codeine crazy, and we're like, hey,
yeah.
This man has issues.
Yeah, exactly, man. That's very well put. So we're talking. I mean, again, this is the thing with stuff like Mob, because they don't just bring it with the music and the messaging. They've got skits on here. They've got stuff like where P is chatting shit, and that's fine. Like, I find that at least you're giving me an insight outside the music to how you genuinely feel about people who talk about stars and weed. And
classic, it's a classic skit too. Like, you think about all the drama that came out of a skit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just, it's like, I ain't Superman. It's about who get who first. And I'm just like, yeah, This is it. You know, it's really interesting to know that those skits were kind of done at the end, or when Havoc was in the studio and Prodigy would just be talking. It's just like that youthful spirit of confrontation. I loved it. And you know, Big Noids, you know, I've got three cases in three places. That's hence why he wasn't in the photo shoot for Infamous.
For sure.
Because he was at court that day. Mm. You know this whole thing about, you know, you gotta live what you rap and rap what you live. They did that.
Yeah, they did that.
Hey guys, this is Jerobi from A Tribe Called Quest. You're listening to the Crate 808 Podcast.
Yo, what's up, man? It's your man LZI, and you're rocking with the Crate 808 Podcast. You know what I'm saying? Where you can check out, you know, artists like me.
Hey, it's Steve Rifkin from Loud Records. You're rocking with the Crate 808 Podcast. Spread the word. These guys are dope. The questions they ask and the interview is amazing. Enjoy yourself, be safe, and be healthy.
1212, you know what it is. It's your man SKYZOO, Sky Zoo, live out the borough. And this is the Crate 808 Podcast. Make sure you subscribe, rate, review, and most importantly, share that love and put your peoples on.
Peace and light, this is Cyrock, rocking with Crate 808 Podcast. And you want to check out everything hip hop on crate808.com.
Yo, this is Juggernaut, Nottingham City, NG area. You're rocking with the Crate 808 Podcast. Make sure you keep it locked in. There's so many gems drop. Crate808.com.
Hey, yo, this is the one and only R.A., the Rugged Man. And I'm rocking with the Crate 808 Podcast with my man Cam.
When it's not that far, I'm trying to think, it's probably about a year, 2 years, maybe even less than that, when they then bring out Hell on Earth.
It was the following year.
The following year, man, 96 then. Yeah, 96, Hell on Earth. Just as a caveat, this is probably my favourite Mob album. If for you, what was the situation? You were thinking, like, how have Mob changed? Have they changed? Is it important they changed?
It was, I never forget, I know exactly where I was. I was on the 220 bus going over the bridge. Until my memory's mad. I was going over the bridge on the 220 bus, and I remember popping that tape into my Iowa Walkman.
Mm-mm.
And when I pressed play, and I heard Animal Instinct, and Havoc said something. He's like, we're going to do, it's like the Infamous album. We're just going to do it again.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, no problem. But what that really signified to me over the years is that they knew the formula they hit with the Infamous.
Mm.
So consider, you know, Juvenile Hell didn't work out. Go over to Loud, A&Rs. And, you know, I've got to shout out Scott Free and Matty C for what they did.
Absolutely.
On the album. Integral parts to Mobb Deep's career. But Hell on Earth. It's weird because it feels like it's their sophomore album, even though it's their third.
Yeah.
But it was a continuation. It was a two piece. You know, like I listen to The Chronic, then I have to listen to Doggy Style.
Yeah.
They're both two sides of the same coin. It was literally the sequel to The Infamous. But I will say this, they doubled down on the darkness.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the only album in their catalogue that Havoc produced from top to bottom. I think that's significant.
I think that's probably why I find it my favourite. And there's a big favourite between favourite and best, because
yes,
there's a big difference.
Yeah, you know what? For the years, Infamous is still one of my favourite hip-hop albums ever. Goes without saying. It's only like the last couple of years, I think, you know what? And being in the studio with Kaiser and talking about these albums, I think Hell on Earth might be the best Mobb Deep album.
Mm.
And it's edging forward in terms of being my favourite.
Yeah.
Just because of how it's just I don't want to use the word cohesive because it's overused, but it's it's literally just seamless, man.
Yeah,
it's album. It's winter. It's perfect for the winter. One of my favorite winter albums. And you know, we're celebrating the 24th anniversary. Next year is going to be 25 years.
Wow.
Of Hell on Earth. And you know, there's different parts of my life where I couldn't cite this album. I remember being in between jobs and, you know, having to go to the job center and whatnot. Mm. And I would listen to Hell on Earth, the title track, on the way to the job center, because that's what that place represented to me. Like, I hated it.
So I
would listen to Hell on Earth, the song, and it's just flawless album.
This is the thing, when you talk about runs, it is a sequel. They've clearly said that as well. And I find that is fine. Because for me, it is less dynamic. You said cohesive. One of the arguments I hear from my friends about Hell on Earth, friends, because they don't like Hell on Earth, because there's a very thin line between cohesive and monotonous. For me, it's not as dynamic as Infamous because there's such a big range on Infamous. But this is diamond-tipped clarity of, we're good at this and we're going to do this. And I find that fine. They do repeat themes, they do repeat, but their rhyming, I would say P's rhyming on here is almost some of the best he's ever done for me.
Agreed, agreed.
We talk about rewindables and hidden gems. Let me mm-hmm. just, I think this album is littered with them because I don't think not enough people talk about some of these tracks, but drop a gem on them for me.
Listen, come on now.
Come on, bruv.
Bruv. Listen.
Go on.
I was a massive Biggie fan. And go to on. This day, I'm so upset that Biggie didn't go in a studio and do a diss track to Tupac and call it that. I don't mind the little subliminals and the one lines here and there, but drop a gem on it. This is what I talk about, the confrontational spirit they had. Mm-mm. Mobb Deep, right, spoke up for New York. You know, LA, drop a gem on them. You know, you think about guys like Royal Flush and Worldwide, man. They were at the forefront of that. Some people may say this is in bad taste, and I understand it. To put that out after Tupac had already passed.
Unreal.
Come on, man.
Unreal.
Prodigy's verse on there. He said, I have the whole New York State
aiming at your face.
Aiming at your face. You scream louder than an opera.
Opera, mate. Mate, they've got bangers as big as African spears. Come on, bro. He's taking you down. The way they are, as you said, confrontational, because I was on the Pac side. I was on the West Coast side. I was more West than East. I think, to be fair, I got Hell on Earth around the same time it came out. But Infamous, I was definitely late to. I got Infamous after Hell on Earth for me.
Okay.
So yeah, that's the way I went in. So this might be why it's my favourite. But then I do remember at that time thinking, these guys, like, Pac is calling you out, and Pac is probably the biggest rapper in the world right now, and they don't give a shit. Like, they do not give a shit. And when we talk about P-Man and we talk about this song especially, I think one of the things, like, you have, again, the snare, the vocal sample, you know, the pain is gonna go, that whole thing, package, peak Mobb Deep, precise Mobb Deep.
It's when Prodigy said, you know what happened? 60 G's worth of gun clapping. I said, come on, man. Oh,
it's not even subliminal anymore.
I love it, man. And you know the sequencing of that album.
Oh my God.
To open up with Animal Instinct and you've got Infamous Mobb on there. And I think Hell on Earth is really important because they now start to introduce their crew. But then to have Drop a Gem on them, it's the Infamous back in the house once again. Nah, I've got chills talking about it. Drop a Gem on them is madness. Madness.
Mate, I'm so glad I'm here with you right now talking about this.
You don't understand. You don't understand what this does to me. Like, because I'm a peaceful man, you know. I'm a peaceful man. I grew up in the church. But the music, when I hear Drop a Gem, if I was going to war, if I was going to go and do something to someone, I'd probably do it to a Mobb Deep song.
This whole album, you could go to war with this whole album, bro. This is the go to war album, I think.
Drop a Gem on them. Are you mad?
I know.
And then you talk about extortion.
Mate, it goes.
Your bridges. It goes. ELO extortion. Sorry, I'm getting carried away. Go ahead.
No. I didn't mean to talk. I think we're getting so hyped right now because you said sequencing. You're right. Drop a Gem, Bloodsport, Extortion. Right, forget it. That's by them tracks, something smashed. Like, something.
No, you know what? I'm not even a massive fan like of Bloodsport, but I know how it works in the context of the album. Albums need to have peaks and valleys, you know?
Yes, for sure.
And Hell on Earth is really like, it's a journey through hell.
It's a journey through hell.
And then the way they end that album with Still Shining and Apostle's Warning. Like, did you hear what Prodigy said? Come on, man. Come on, man.
Apostle's Warning. Mate, the way they... Again, we talked about sampling, mate. They're sampling when they use the King of New York. I love King of New York. I remember discovered that film early. Like, no one else I knew talked about it. And when I heard that music on Mobb, I was like, what? Whoa, what? Like... That is just another level of, I don't know, they push a lot of buttons, and that gangster mafioso life, that mob mafia sound. Yeah, man, they absolutely nail it.
You know what's crazy about that album? When you think about it, you know, Infamous came out, what, April 95, Hell on Earth, November 96. To produce those two albums in such a short span of time, you know, they found their pocket. They found their pocket. And when Hell on Earth, I remember the anticipation that the album was coming, you know, at school, and, you know, we were copying tapes and passing it around. And it was a pure time.
That's amazing.
Yo, what up, y'all? This is DJ Premier, and you're checking out the Crates 808 podcast. I put an S on it because there's more than one record in the crate, you know what I'm saying? So that's how we dig, that's how we play, and that's what real DJs do. You heard? That's why it goes down. We out ya.
That's interesting when we talk about Hell on Earth that time being a sequel, it being that hardcore sound. We touched on P being incredible on this album.
Yes.
I want to talk about P with you generally, Prodigy, and where he stands, if he's like, you know, where he stands in your kind of catalogue of artists you love. But before I do, I just want to say, I think there's one thing that I would love to just say about P is his voice. We talk about rappers' voices, and I don't think I've ever heard anyone as sinister, and I think that's the word for me, is someone who will deliver on their promise. DMX was dark, DMX was grimy, DMX was sinister, but there's something about the calm, I don't even have to rhyme words now, P. You know that guy? Yeah. Oh, you're not even right, you're just telling me you're going to fuck me up. Like, that for me, I think, comes to the forefront whenever I think of P, and rest in peace, I think of that. When you think of Prodigy on this album and then going into Murder Music, where do you think he stands? Like, does he get into your five, if you have a five? And two, where do you think he stands in the game at this point, in 96?
Okay, so Prodigy himself is not in my top five, and that's not because he's not amazing. I have to compartmentalize my lists in my head. So, because he's part of a group, I don't take him out of the group and put him in my top five.
Fair.
And then I have a list for duos, and then I have a list for groups.
I love this.
So Mobb Deep is my favorite duo of all time. So Mobb Deep, MOP, Outkast, Cellar Dwellers. And then after that, it's probably, you know, like UGK and Organized Confusion. Prodigy, between 1995 and 2000, there's a case for him being the best MC on planet Earth. And here's why I say that.
Okay.
Right. All of his verses, tip top in terms of rap performance. His catalog, I'm going to make a case and say, I don't think, in terms of people whose voice has been sampled, he's high up on the list. He is high up on the list. Right, I've got a list of songs here, right, that sampled his voice. You've got Blood Runs Cold, Jedi Mind Tricks, Drug Music, Nonfiction.
Yes.
Sixth Sense, Common, Rock and Roll, Mos Def.
Yeah.
Now think about Drug Music, Sixth Sense, Rock and Roll are his last three bars on Illustrious.
Yeah.
So just on your last three bars, three songs, three different artists who are all totally different have used your voice. Saga Begins, Rakim, Beware, Big Pun, Ozone by OC. Just the other day, Sean versus Flair, West Side Gun, used him too. His voice is on the intro to the War Report. Think about Capone and Noriega and how influenced they are by Mobb Deep. Rapper Big Pooh on Speed by Little Brother said, I write my lifetime in between the paper's lines.
Yeah.
Right. So Prodigy, man, he's got a litany of quotables. Almost every line is a quotable.
Mm.
Every single line. It's a quotable. He was very abstract in what he was saying when you refer to his verse on like Apostle's Warning, but his delivery, it was so detailed and so concise. Mm. So concise. And I would love it. His style was unpredictable because of the patterns he would use. Like sometimes he'd end a line and like you said, it wouldn't even rhyme.
Yeah.
And then a couple of bars later, he'd rhyme it again. It was street, but it was poetic. Like you can tell he was a guy who read books, but you know, he made it sound so seamless. Mm. Prodigy between 95 to 2000 was up there, man. Like when you think about his guest appearances, you know, Tres Leches on the Pun album, Queens Is, LL Cool J, Play for Keeps. Method Man.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Come on, man.
Yeah.
And then you talk about HNIC. Forget it, man.
Yeah.
Forget it.
Yeah, yeah. That's 2000, right? HNIC. Yeah. Yeah.
Forget it, man.
Again, they're prolific when they want to be, because there is a gap between this and Murder Music. What is it, about 99? So, yeah, 3 years. It says touring, whatever, but then he drops Murder Music, HNIC. Yeah, so they then do go on a bit of a run into the noughties. Just so you know, I came out of the Mob kind of bubble a little bit in the noughties, purely because I was listening to other music anyway, but generally it's because people do say they're doing the same thing. I think it took me a minute. I think I got oversaturated. I went and did my other thing with other genres, got really into Doom and Madlib and whatever. And then, and now I look back at Mob in the noughties and I'm catching them gems to this day. I'm catching them to this day. And that is because people like, I mean, look who they put on, Alchemist, and we're good to what Murder Music. So yeah, that's where I'm coming from when it comes to
My journey similar. You know, I'm going to say this, though, between 95 and 2000, you know, Mobb Deep were extremely prolific in between albums, too. You check out soundtracks like Sunset Park. They were on Slam.
Yeah.
Soul in the Hole, Rare Species.
Yeah.
The stuff they did with Violator.
For sure.
Think about some of the Lucys they've got in their catalogs. Check out the Infamous Archives. There's like it's a double album, even though it wasn't authorized by the group. It's a double album of outtakes from the Infamous and from Murder Music. It's like Mobb Deep have one of the best Lucy B-side catalogs in rap music. And I just hope that one day someone mixes and masters these songs and puts them out as a deluxe package. I'd pay for it.
Yeah, yeah.
I would absolutely pay for it. But, you know, same thing with me in the noughties. Like, I think after Infamy, I was disappointed.
Yeah, I was. Yeah,
with the Infamy album. Mm. But I think the Free Agents mixtape, when I bought that and I heard that, you know, they went back to back to Independence. They released it on Land Speed. But that bonus disc with the first Infantry songs on there, crazy. Cool G Rap, Cormega, Littles, 50 Cent.
Damn, that sounds heavy.
It was nuts. I bought it from HMV. Just it's Mobb Deep.
Yeah,
I didn't even realize I had the bonus disc. And when I opened this bonus disc and I saw the track list, and I said, "Excuse me, bro." Like, and it also shows you how they influenced people because they had songs that they produced for other people and featured on as part of this disc.
Mm.
So, like I mentioned, Cool G Rap was on there. Mm. They were one of the first people to work with 50 Cent on Bump That.
Yeah.
Like, so their influence runs strong, particularly in the noughties. But then the solo stuff came out too, and Prodigy style changed. In the noughties for me, it wasn't as detailed and concise. It was a lot simpler in terms of delivery, but it was packed with information.
Mm.
So, you know, he started to double down on the whole secret society, you know,
Illuminati,
science, technology, and politicians, and, you know, the mutants and all that kind of stuff. HNIC2 was incredible.
Yeah.
Product of the 80s, incredible. Albert Einstein.
Oh, yeah.
Was Albert nuts. Einstein.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nuts.
That was different, man. That was different.
Nuts. Nuts.
Yeah.
I mean, I know we're talking about the 90s and stuff, but a lot of the stuff they did in the 90s, I think, informed what they did in the 2000s.
And, you know,
we'll definitely touch on. I want to raise a point, though. You talk about P's voice.
Mm.
And I think there's something really incredible how someone can casually talk about violence. I think that's what makes it a lot more effective. He's similar to BG in a sense. And I know they did a song together, but when you listen to BG, you know, talk about, "I'm going to get the chopper and blow your head off." And he doesn't shout. He just says it very casually over a Manny Fresh beat, but you believe every word he says.
Mm.
Prodigy is like hip hop's version of Jake the Snake Roberts.
Interesting. Let's go.
Because I'm a big wrestling fan. Mm-mm-mm. Jake the Snake Roberts was very poetic when he threatened you. He never raised his voice.
That's amazing.
Not one time.
Yeah.
You know, Hulk Hogan was supposed to be like, "You know something, brother?"
Yeah.
Jake Roberts was just like, "Watch for the snake under the grass." Something just calm.
Yeah.
But you knew what time it was when it came to him. In many ways, Jake the Snake never won a major world championship. You know, Prodigy never got that solo platinum album or whatever, you know, you would equate it to. But in terms of his casual yet abstract, deliberate, colorful, he was the MC's MC.
No, absolutely, man. I feel that. I feel all of that.
Hey, yo, 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 this your boy Pharrell March, and right now, you are rocking live with the Crate 808 Podcast. Enjoy this week's episode, and just remember to subscribe and rate and review. Peace.
We're talking about Murder Music then, bro. Like, when he goes into that, and what is this, 99? Where were you when this came out? And what did you think about this when it first came? What was your first impressions of this album when it came out? Actually, sorry. Before I forget, 97, I was going back into my archives. You know, you talk about Lucy's, just a big up to Hoodlum, because Mobb, Noid, and Rakim on Hoodlum.
Rakim, yeah.
That for me is a track. Sorry to cut you off there, bro, but
No. It's, I'm talking like, you know, you talk about soundtracks. Back in those days, they were put together like albums to me. So Soul in the Hole is my favorite soundtrack ever. Mobb Deep are all over the soundtracks.
Yeah.
All over them. And what's crazy is when you go and do your research and connect the dots, like some of these songs were recorded for their albums.
Yeah.
You know, so like Nobody Likes Me from the Violator project, I think that was recorded for Murder Music.
Oh,
but you
really?
Just see how they can just, they literally had a stash. Like, hey, you take this, boom. You take this, boom. You take that. So,
crazy.
No, Mobb Deep, extremely, extremely prolific.
I love that, man. So go in then, man. Come on, Murder Music. What were you going to say?
Murder Music. Where was I? I was in college. I was in college. So it's the first time I'm buying my own music now. So I'm not getting tapes and stuff from other people. I have to shout out two people from my college days. Sarah and Tola. Two girls. Loved Mobb Deep. Oh, my days. I didn't even know women listened to Mobb Deep. These two. So Sarah actually became a music promoter. And sick. She booked the Foreign Exchange to come over for their first show.
Oh, wow.
And she booked me and Drastic. Shout out to Drastic to open up for Black Milk back in the day. So it's funny how, you know, the dots connect. But Sarah and Tola, I'm actually going to go find them after this episode. Loved Mobb Deep. You dare say a bad word about Prodigy, they would come for you. Like, they would come for you. But Murder Music was definitely one of the soundtracks to the college years. I remember going to Sounds in Ladbroke Grove and buying my copy. Mm. And I'm going to say something quite blasphemous, actually. Mm. I wasn't a fan of Quiet Storm.
Okay.
Was not a fan of Quiet Storm.
What? All right. Explain that to me.
Just didn't like the beat.
What?
Didn't like it.
You didn't even, what, did the video swing it for you? Did anything swing it for you? The remix?
No.
Oh, my days, man. That no. Kim verse?
I love the lyrics. I love the lyrics. It was a production thing. I've grown to like it more over the years. But you know, you mentioned Hidden Gems. Mm-hmm. I think this is the Mobb Deep album with the Hidden Gems.
Okay.
On there. What so I mentioned before, Illustrious. I love the fact that they spelled the word wrong. It's actually I-L-L.
Yeah, yeah.
But they spelled it A-L. Prodigy's verse on Illustrious, his first verse is top five Prodigy verses to me.
Prodigy is stellar on that. It's just,
yeah, when he goes, the last page of a wild rhyme writing nigga, P holds the pen tightly, explode nightly.
Yeah.
Don't say you rap dudes don't excite me. Y'all niggas is trash rap. Wanna fight me? You're shook to death. Take breaths and step lightly. Oh my days, man.
Oh, man, this guy, man.
How do you write like that? Like, how do you write like that? And then you got songs like Where You're From with 8-Ball. Again, something Mobb Deep don't get enough credit for, in my opinion, is how they branched out. You know, they were very insular. Very, 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 very insular. But they branched out to 8-Ball and did a song like Where You're From. And then, you know, songs like Where Your Heart At, you know, that's almost like an R&B song to me. Mm. You know, Prodigy talking about how he'd find it hard to sleep at night if he had beef with someone who was like him.
Yeah.
You know, they got so introspective. Yeah. On that album, songs like Streets Raised Me, you know, talking about, look, this is, you know, it wasn't as confrontational. It was more somber.
Spread
this
love.
Is when,
I mean, that,
come on, man,
you're right. Yeah.
Come on, man, great album. And what's the other one? What's Your Poison?
Oh, banger
with Cormega.
Banger, yeah.
So this is the time, you know, Cormega. And for those who don't know, Loud Records was interested in signing Cormega. So now he's around Mobb Deep. Then from this song, you now got Killer's Theme. And then, you know, years later, you get Thun and Kiko and all that. Like, Murder Music was them expanding their sound. And what I think is really important about Murder Music is this is 99. The industry's now awash with money. You know, everybody's expected to sell a million records or less. Mobb Deep managed to transcend in the midst of all of this, evolve their sound, still be them and sell a million records. How on earth do you do that?
Yeah, it's true. Rap was living there. That was large. That was large back then, man. You know,
if you look at the videos, you know, Prodigy's got on the sunglasses now, you know, there's a bit of money, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I can imagine Steve Rifkin was like, okay, so Infamous, Hell on Earth, we've recouped. Time to spend some money, you know.
It's true. It's true.
Speedboats and all of that. And no, it was Murder Music. I do recall thinking at the time, you know what, this isn't as good as the Infamous and Hell on Earth. But over the last decade, I've listened to it a lot more. And it's a great, 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 great album.
Mm.
It's awesome. And it's really important in terms of their catalog, you know, introducing The Alchemist to so many new ears.
For sure.
Infamous Mobb, you know, Cool G Rap's verse on The Realist.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's one of his best verses. And I think it was actually integral to him going over to Raucous, you know, because Cool G Rap was on a run during that time. Murder Music, man, music to kill people too. I know that doesn't sounds crazy considering what's going on in the world right now, but murder music.
It was that excess. Rap was in excess mode, man. You got Slim Shady LP and he's killing his missus. You got DMX over here with blood all over himself in the front cover. You got Murder Music. Murder Music was like kind of timid compared to some of that stuff. And then, but then you look back and you realise that they were coming through a big stage in rap where remember Beef just being huge. Obviously, East and West, and they're right at the heart of that. I remember after that, it was Jay-Z and Jigga using... I don't even know if this is true, but you know what rap circles are like. It's like, oh, it's because he said Dunny in his rhyme, and he was using the Dun language, and P got, you know, messed up with it, and he was annoyed by it.
I think what happened was, you know when... I think it was on Money Cash Hoes, where Jay-Z said Snoop came through and crushed the buildings. Prodigy took offense to that because he was saying, yo, like when we was replying on LA, where were you?
Yeah.
You didn't say nothing.
Yeah.
So I think that's, you know, where some of the tension may have stemmed from.
I see.
But, you know, I've gone record. I said, of course, Mobb Deep influenced Jay-Z. Like he used Prodigy's voice on The Evils.
He's one of the most influenced MCs, man. He's got Biggie, he's got Nas, he's got P, he's got everything in him. And yeah, he made it his own, but you can't say he wasn't. Absolutely.
You
know,
you look at the way he went at Prodigy on Takeover. You don't go at people like that unless you respect them. You're trying to take out the competition because you know they're dangerous.
Absolutely.
Similar to when Ice Cube on No Vaseline, you know, why he went at MC Ren like that. Because he knows, okay, that's the killer over there. I've got to, you know, it's almost like at school. Sometimes you'd have birthday rushes or you're rushing someone, you know, you're going to stomp them out. You have to take out the biggest one first. So the rest of everyone else knows, okay, he's serious. You know, I'm going to take one of yours.
Yeah.
So I do think the way, you know, with that whole Jay-Z Prodigy thing, I think the reason why he went at him like that is because he knew the levels.
I love that about P, and I love that about like how they are confrontational, but like I said, they do spread love. They'll have Woo were all over their albums, and I loved that. I think Ray was probably wasted a little bit on Murder Music. I preferred him on the other stuff he's done before. On them B-sides, you said, I've not heard the infamous, well, for a long, long time, the infamous Mobb album from 2014.
Right.
Did they have Eye for an Eye with Ghost on there?
Yeah, I've got that.
Okay, because I don't think I've ever really heard that properly, or I need to refresh.
I'll send it to you.
Yeah,
that was the original version.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
The original, but they remixed it because they couldn't clear the sample.
Ah, right, I see.
So with the version that we all love, I mean, the remix is great, but the version on the Infamous is because it's an Al Green sample. I think it was chopped up to the point where it was unrecognizable, so they could use it. So the Eye for an Eye, but and the Survival of the Fittest remix with Crystal Johnson. Oof.
But this is it. And this is they're coming off this kind of massive boom in rap anyway. It's interesting when you look at their first videos, and then you look at this video where they're in, like, you know, with Nas, It's Mine, and they're all there in the tropical. And they're still talking the same language. It's just they're now here. And I didn't
like that song either, you know.
No, do you know what? I didn't. And I go back now, and that hook. No need to get it. I don't know what it is. It's addictive.
I didn't like it.
No. Chris is good. Hey, look, anytime someone samples Scarface, I'm kind of like 10% in anyway. So.
And you know what I'm going to say? I want to say this, though. Even though this song's I don't necessarily love, it doesn't detract from my enjoyment of the album. A lot of people say, you know, if the album's got a skip, it's got skips on it, it can't be a classic. Listen, when I listen to Illmatic, I skip One Time For Your Mind. I don't like the song, and it's okay.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I'm controversial.
I'm kind of with you, though. I'm kind of with you. There's some highs that are so high. Imagine Shook Ones being on the album, there being two weak tracks on Infamous. Imagine that. You'd still call it a classic. Like, I'm sorry.
Of course.
That album is, yeah. So I am there with you. Mate, I like Equemini, and that's a classic to me. But there are skits in Equemini that make me furious. Like, I don't need to hear the screaming baby for 7 minutes after a track, and I can't skip it because it's embedded in the track on CD. Do you know that kind of stuff that would wind you up as a kid? But I mean, again, this is the thing. Hidden Gems on here, bang, you've killed it. When you're going from this to their next steps, which are like in the noughties, where do you think they ever really hit another high as one of these records again?
No. The fan, you know, I'm wearing a Mobb Deep shirt, but I've got to be honest. I think the last high Mobb Deep hit was HNIC, and I count that as a Mobb Deep album. A lot of people say no, it's not, but then I would say, well, if that's the case, then we don't count Cuban Links and Iron Man as Wu-Tang albums. To me, it's all in the same catalog.
Yeah,
Infamy was disappointing. You know, I just don't. There were some songs on there that I really liked. Like I loved Hey Love with 112. Loved it.
Oh, Hey Love,
loved it, mate. Loved it.
I've actually got the track list here because I was listening to Infamy the other day. I was thinking, this is
Burn,
mate. Burn is a banger. Get At Me.
Burn is amazing.
Get At Me, man.
Get At Me, Alchemist. I love the song with Littles, No Place Like Home.
No Place
Something like that.
Yeah.
Loved it.
Yeah.
Free Agents, I mentioned it before. It's an I would encourage anyone listening to this, if you've not checked out Free Agents, checked out. You know, this is Mobb Deep, you know, dipping their toe back into that independent scene that was so vibrant and varied in the early 2000s and, you know, late 90s. I do think, though, a lot of the gems in Mobb Deep's later catalogs were in their solo stuff.
Okay.
I'm going to go on record and say, you know, The Silent Partner, which is the album that Havoc did with The Alchemist.
Yeah.
Go and check that out. It's amazing. And the last Mobb Deep album, I think, I didn't know it was the last Mobb Deep album at the time, but it's a good album. Mm. It's a really, really good album. And you see remnants of what they did on Murder Music, working with 8-Ball. There's Bun B and Juicy J.
Wow.
You know, Kay Tranada
on production. That's amazing. Yeah.
Boy Wonder as well. We know Drake. Drake is a massive Mobb Deep fan. He quoted Keep It Thorough on Tuscan Leather. So, in some ways, I listened to it and I'm like, did they know this was the last Mobb Deep album? Because it just feels like the end of a chapter. And then you have the extra songs from the previous recording sessions. You know, when it ends, it takes you back. It's just full circle. So I would highlight, I think, in their later catalogue, definitely the H&I series, 1 and 2.
1 and 2, yeah.
The Bumpy Johnson album is a good listen. Albert Einstein is superb. Silent Partner, incredible.
Yeah.
And then that last, the infamous Mobb Deep.
Okay.
Highly recommended.
Yes, yes, you're rocking with the best. This is the one and only Just Blaze. Right now you're checking out the Crate 808 podcast. Remember to hit up crate808.com, like, comment, subscribe, and all of that. Peace.
If you look at the Mobb legacy, where can you hear that Mobb sound today?
The Alchemist. The Alchemist has redefined his sound 2-3 times in the last 20 years. I don't think Alchemist would be as great or as influential without his experience in Mobb Deep. I know he was introduced and, you know, mentored by DJ Muggs. You know, I can imagine what he would have learned from just sitting next to the Havoc. Alchemist sound is so embedded in New York culture. We forget he's from the West.
Yeah. You forget that.
Like, we forget that. Like, you look at the first Infantry cover, and, you know, it's half New York and it's half Beverly Hills, you know?
Yeah.
He's carrying on the Mobb Deep sound to this day. What he, especially the stuff he did with Prodigy on, like, Return of the Mac.
Yeah.
Incredible album. Griselda.
Yeah.
Griselda are a branch on the Mobb Deep tree. Mm. You know, shout out to Darringer. Can you imagine when you listen to the stories of Conway and Benny and you consider their ages, they're a similar age to us. So they were outside doing certain things to this music.
Yeah.
You could, so it's obviously the soundtrack of what they were doing. Boldy James.
Big up.
I hear the Mobb Deep influence, and his voice is so similar to Prodigy.
Yeah.
It's quite eerie. It's quite eerie considering, you know, this person's from Detroit, this person's from New York. And, you know, maybe that's probably the reason why Alchemist kind of gravitates to him, because he reminds him of Prodigy. I don't know. But every time I hear Boldy James, I think of Prodigy, even though, you know, Boldy James, I do enjoy his music. Rock Marciano, even though he has his own sound, it's, to me, it's rooted in Mobb Deep. It comes through.
Yeah.
V-Don, the producer, who works with, like, Dark Low, Dave East. He carries on the sound. Sid Roams. Can't forget Sid Roams.
For sure, man. Yeah, absolutely.
Can't forget them. They did an awesome job on Product of the 80s. You know, we're fans of this person, Beat Butcher.
Oh, yeah, man. He was on your pod as well, man. Go check that interview.
Beat Butcher carries on the Mobb Deep sound, even though he's evolved and he does a load of different things and does it so well. But he will say himself, you know, he's a massive Mobb Deep fan. Bringing it back to these shores, Terra Firma.
Absolutely. 100%. Absolutely.
You listen to Terra Firma. You can hear the Mobb Deep influence. Like, I've spoken to Kaiser. Like, Kaiser, that's my guy. Mm-mm-mm. And we've spoken about Hell on Earth at length. So you can hear the influences of Hell on Earth in his music. Triple Darkness. Go and listen to M9 stuff, right? M9 has gone on record as being a great big Mobb Deep fan.
Yeah.
I remember there was a documentary years ago on Channel 4 about New York hip hop, and he was on Twitter and he wrote, what? No mention of Mobb.
Yeah.
Like, it was just like, no, you haven't mentioned Mobb Deep. I'm not happy. So M9, Cyrus Malachi, all these guys are influenced, you know, by Mobb Deep. And I'm going to also, even though I don't know their music intimately, based on the content, and my wife raised this, you can hear their sound in Nines and Gigs.
Gigs for sure.
Now, I don't know their music like that. My wife said, listen to what Gigs is talking about.
Yeah.
Consider the age. Just consider it. he was listening to Mobb Deep. Giggs and Cormega have a relationship.
Yeah.
I'm going to go on record and I'm saying, I bet you that Giggs was out there doing some madness to Mobb Deep. I bet you. And I would love to speak to him one day and find out what his favorite Mobb Deep albums and songs are. But this sound is everywhere. Like, you know, I mentioned Drake. Drake is influenced by Mobb Deep. You know, Boy Wonder that co-produced a song with Havoc on the last album. You know, their influence in terms of even the mainstream, and it's, you know, I'm a wrestling fan. It's like the best wrestlers are often in the independent scene or they're not in the big leagues, but the guys in the big leagues are watching the guys on the indie scene. Like, yo, that guy, we need to get him. It's a similar thing with Mobb Deep. Like, you might be up there. Yeah. You're looking over like, yo, like,
absolutely.
You know, when you look at what's happening now, like with 38 Special, Trust Gang, that whole upstate New York, even though they've got their own sound, it's an extension of Mobb Deep.
Yeah, absolutely. And people even use them as that adjective, don't they? Like, oh, it's Mobb Deep-esque or it's Mobb-esque. You know, it's that.
Yeah.
That, so you know what it is straight away. So, yeah. And I feel like that's a great argument for this run because they all have trademark sounds for sure. Della, Pac, everyone has that sound. Everyone has that thing. But it is when you look back and you realise people, obviously rap goes through peaks and troughs of different sounds. When you look at Mobb, that is peaking. That sound and energy and feeling in my rotation is constant. Today it's constant and it's like, wow.
And you know, I want to add to what you've just said there because it's 100% right. Havoc is not celebrated enough as a producer. When you consider who was in his circles at the time, you know, he's worked with DJ Premier, Large Professor, you know, The Alchemist. Havoc still created his own sound. You know a Havoc song, you know a Havoc beat. So again, you know, my new album, my wife was in the studio with me and TE1 played a beat and it was like doom, 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 doom. And I heard it and me and my wife looked at each other and we were like, that sounds like Trife Life.
Yeah.
This is like a Mobb Deep song. Like the way the snares were. Yeah. And ironically, he played me another beat afterwards and it was the same sample used on Give Up the Goods.
Oh.
So it was just that vibe. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So Havoc's production, even though, you know, Premiere was like boom bap and, you know, smack you in the face and all that. Havoc's production style was the missing link between a horror movie and a psychological thriller. So eerie, so atmospheric. You listen to it walking down the street, you're looking over your shoulder because you don't know who's going to jump out at you. It was Havoc as a producer. And then you look at what he's done. You know, we talk about Prodigy's influence, but Eminem has called Havoc to make tracks for him.
Yeah.
He's produced stuff for Kanye West. Havoc's produced for LL Cool J, Foxy Brown.
Yeah.
We're getting a Method Man and Havoc album. You know, all these seeds were planted from this run.
Yeah.
And these relationships have extended, like Live Nigga Rap from It Was Written. That was originally recorded for Hell on Earth. And they sold it to him. Like Havoc, his sound is very insular. He produces, you know, he produces mainly for his people, but there's little gems scattered all over the place. And as a producer, he's absolutely an incredible, incredible producer.
Well, there you go, man. I think that case, that's one of the best cases I've heard for a Mobb run. Yeah, for a Mobb run, for sure. Absolutely.
Oh, man.
And we've even talked about, like, you know, you can talk about them in an artistic way, like the way they rhyme and the samples. And yeah, okay, that is one level of looking at Mobb. But I've really enjoyed the fact that you've brought that other aspect, which is the substance to it and the ongoing kind of themes from this whole music, man. So I love that, Chris, man. Have you got a 30-second conclusion for me for this run being the best run?
All right, I do. Here we go. This wasn't the start of your ending, but the start of the greatest run in 90s hip-hop and the emergence of a legendary group. But by the time they embarked on this genius period, Ice Cube was already a legend. A Tribe Called Quest and Redman had a couple of classics to their names already. And while some of their peers were critically lauded for their efforts, Mobb Deep were recovering from being dropped by 4th and Broadway after a lackluster album. However, the perfect quiet storm of right label, right sound, and the right time, along with their creative resilience, set in motion a train of events that became a roller coaster of momentum. The infamous Hell on Earth and Murder Music are an eye-widening ride on an iron horse through the lava-laden streets of Queensbridge, the hell they called home. The sight of burning barrels and the smell of charred dreams positioned despair and death not only as inevitable, but in a weird and twisted way, a form of escape. The constant jostling between living and dying is the sonic soundscape for real niggas who ain't got no feelings, and a masterclass in how to extract artistic beauty from tragic and unfortunate circumstances. Havoc and Prodigy wrote their lifetimes in between the paper's lines and made the Dunn language sound eloquent to the ear and easy to understand. The cultural currency of Mobb Deep is worth more than gold, and the influence of these works outweighs any sale or certification. This trifecta of releases was the perfect mix of rhymes that were literary scriptures and beats that were as vivid as obituary pictures. These three classics are essential entries in hip-hop's musical canon, required listening for the zealous new heads and treasured war stories for the seasoned soldiers. Hip-hop wouldn't be, sound, or feel the same without Mobb Deep.
Man. I was going to end that there, bro. That is, how do you follow that? Wow, that's great. People out there, get some response going. I want to hear what you guys think of this mob just chat. So crate808.com, hit us up at crate808@gmail.com. I'll get Chris involved if we can on some of the email correspondence. And yeah, man, I think that's amazing, Chris. I think you've absolutely nailed it, bro. So for some more of this brilliance breaking out as podcast, I just want to know what you guys have got in the canon, what have you guys got coming up, and where can we find you guys, man?
All right, so we are, in terms of what we've got coming up, we have like a bag of interviews, man. You know, we've spoken to engineers, producers. You know, just now we dropped an interview with Anton Pashansky, who engineered the Breaking Atoms album. We've spoken to David Lotwin, founder of D&D Studios. So if you're a liner note nerd like myself, check it out. We drop every Tuesday, midnight Eastern time, 5 a.m. UK time. So, you know, you can get the content before you go to work. So we're quite specific about that. In terms of what we've got coming up next year, you've got the Independent Indie Podcast Awards. So we're working on that. So if you're an independent podcast, wait for the details. We'll be sending that out, and you can, you know, we're going to have an award show, man. Like if we're allowed out, you know, put your tux on, put your dress on and come out and celebrate. And I've got to mention, Summit is doing on the 19th of December, he is doing a 24-hour podcast to raise money for premature children.
Amazing.
He's going to be doing it. I don't know how he's going to talk for 24 hours, but if you know him like I know him, he'll find a way. So I will be on there. Yeah, Breaking Atoms, the podcast. Please subscribe and you know, check us out and, you know, support the podcast community here in the UK. It's not lost on me that, you know, we're just fans of the music. Yourself, me, Summit, Shotgun, all these people, Rhymes Like Dimes. And we're literally here in the UK capturing history that may have otherwise been lost.
Yeah. So, absolutely, man.
Yeah, if you're check out Breaking Atoms, we've had OC, Mike Geronimo, Apollo Brown. You know what time it is, just by those names. You know what time it is. So.
Seriously. Chris, before you leave us today, bro, I'm gonna ask you what I ask everyone, man. What's the last great piece of music you heard? Could be old, could be new, but it can't be Mobb because we talked about Mobb. So what have you got?
You know what I've really enjoyed? Mm-hmm. The new Action Bronson album.
Oh, okay.
Only for Dolphins.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it. And I tell you why, it's because I should have been going to Cuba in the next couple of weeks. And because of restrictions, I can't go. But that music would have been perfect for the pool.
Yeah.
So I listened to it and I'm like, I actually really, really, really like this.
Yeah.
And I love the new Static Selector single, the one with Nas and Joey Badass.
Oh, I've not heard that yet.
Handle Your Business.
Sweet, man. I will definitely, man. That's sick. Yeah, I like that Action Bronson. I haven't heard it too many times, as you know, so much music in it, you don't get to rewind that many. But like, yeah, wicked. I like it, Chris. So bro, we will catch you on the flip side. Thank you again for bringing this. I need to get myself one of their Mobb tees now, because you've made
this is this is a Milk Crate exclusive. Can't get these no more, you know. Come on now.
Okay.
Can't get these no more, man.
Okay, sweet, man. Well, Chris, thank you, man, and we'll catch you soon, bro. Yeah,
my pleasure.
Wicked. Peace.
All right, peace.